Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on May 8th, believe it or not, 2020. We are still here week after week. We've been lucky that Jim Turner is not traveling. So Jim Turner is an attorney over in Washington, D.C., and usually travels. So we don't get a chance to have this many radio shows live with Jim Turner, but he is sheltered in, quarantined in for self-inflicted reasons. And the good thing for that is that we get a chance to pick his brain and find out about some really cool things. Jim is an attorney working with Citizens for Health. Got a great website, citizens.org. Citizens.org, CITIZENS.org. Make sure you go there, sign up for that newsletter. As Jim will tell you through previous radio shows, he's been there since 1993. Actually, almost at the very, 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 very beginning. And he was originally a Ralph Nader Raider, for those people who remember and still know who Ralph Nader is. He wrote a book called The Chemical Feast and did a whole bunch of stuff for those people in home-based businesses that deal with nutritional supplements. Jim Turner is here, who has fought for you with the DSHEA Act, the Dietary Supplement Act. He has worked with helping to make sure that people can call things organic. He has worked with things like acupuncture and acupuncture needles. He has done amazing things over his lifetime as an attorney over in Washington, D.C., and we get a chance to kind of pick his brain on some of the stuff that's happening today based on the previous knowledge of the history that he's had. And he's a really good guy, too, because he always tells you almost all the different sides of the stories because there's usually more than two. So the cool thing is Jim Turner's here. We're going to talk about whatever we're going to talk about in just a little bit, but I really want to say for those people that are listening in, if you do anything with health and nutrition, you want to make sure you listen to previous issues because Jim's like a history lesson on every radio show. You want to share this with your business building partners, maybe even your company owners. There's a lot of things that Citizens does that you need to know about. And if you need a great attorney, obviously use Jim Turner and his offices over at citizens.org. So, Jim, there's my shameless plug and endorsement for all the really cool things that you have done for us over here at Building Fortunes Radio. Just amazing knowledge and an amazing job you've done. So thank you very much. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Peter. I always enjoy having these conversations. And so what are we going to talk about today?
We are going to talk about the coronavirus situation because we've been obviously talking about this since the very beginning. And my opinion is that the coronavirus was real. And it is real, and it really did some damages, and really did kill people. For instance, and specifically, we have our blind gentleman who lives in Washington, D.C., around that area over by you. He's an attorney. Also, he works at the White House. He's working from home right now, but he's blind. His name is Ole Cantos. I've mentioned his name before. He's got three young boys. They're triplets. They also happen to be blind. And they did everything right. They sheltered in, and something happened. They got coronavirus. And they, two of them were in the hospital. So I know it's real. I know people that know people who lost people that died. Then there was the reaction to the coronavirus that sheltered in and shut down businesses. And we have the PPP, which we talked about, the Paycheck Protection Program, and the EIDL, which is the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. And we're kind of watching that kind of work its way through the games that people play relative to those things. But eventually, we're coming down to the thing that Donald Trump is saying: "Hey, you know, we gotta lift up this economy. People have to start going back to work." So Donald Trump is waking up. So there's a little bit of an overreaction, and maybe we're starting to pull back the curtain and find some of the stuff that we all probably, guys like me, suspected, but now we're finding. So, like, let's take a look at this Fauci guy, and let's take a look at this whole reason why we're doing this stuff. And there's been some things that are unearthed that are certainly worth taking a look at, and what direction they might be pushing us in, with vaccines, you know, being mandated all over the place, and social distancing, and Apple and Android kind of coordinating their applications to know exactly where you are relative to whoever else is wherever they are. So there's a whole bunch of issues we can discuss, but as we start to pull back the curtain, one that we started talking about before this radio show started to unearth, and that was about this Judy gal that you might want to give us some backdrop on first, and then we can talk a little bit about that situation and what we're doing with that moving forward.
Well, it's a very interesting situation. I guess that's kind of an understatement about what's happening. Generally speaking, every one of our systems is being turning out to be quite fragile. And there are what I say now when people ask me what do we know about the coronavirus? You know, I'm pretty much of the opinion we don't know very much at all. There's clearly something going on, and when you look at that is with the health situation. There's something is causing people to get sick, the people who say it isn't there, I think, have to take into account the fact that there's an awful lot of evidence that there's something there. What it looks like to me is that pretty much an event occurred, which is called the pandemic, and then there was a pandemic. Then there was a pandemic panic that set in, and we are dealing with two things, and they're separated. They haven't gotten themselves integrated. As I've said before in this program, I started looking at the vaccine policy question back in 1969. I was working with Ralph Nader at that point, and the former Secretary of Health and Human Services, John Gardner, called me specifically and said, would we take a look at the vaccine issue, because when he was secretary, something was going on there that was not very savory. And so I started. He introduced me to a man named J. Anthony Morris, who was at that time a senior flu researcher at the Vaccine Regulatory Agency. And it was very clear that the vaccine regulation process had gotten very, very mixed up and confused. It was basically mixed up and confused at that time, and it remains that way at this time. Because the government's policy is split between promoting the use of vaccinations and ensuring that they're safe and effective. And it's hard for one law or one agency to integrate those two things. And one of the things that's gone on in regulatory reform over the years is to try to separate out the government programs that promote the use of something and the government programs that oversee the use of something. That's not happened that much in the vaccine world. Pretty much the people who oversee vaccines and the people who promote vaccines are pretty shoulder to shoulder close in believing that they're advancing a very important national policy. So starting in 69, we actually unraveled what was then the regulation of vaccines, which is through something called the Division of Biologic Standards at NIH, and that agency was wasn't disbanded, but it was taken away from NIH and put over to FDA and became the Bureau of Biologics. It took about 2.5 to 3 years to do that. And then it started to operate, and one of the first things that happened was the 1976 swine flu debacle. The government set out to inoculate 200 million people, and the evidence of the safety and efficacy, the evidence of the flu vaccine was unsafe and ineffective, was so overwhelming that ultimately the government had to stop at about 49 million and withdraw the program. The fact of the matter is that we don't really know how to ensure that some individuals will not be harmed by vaccines. We don't know how to ensure that. The federal government has a program to pay people who are injured by vaccines. They paid about $4 billion since that was passed in 1987. It's about $4 billion to families who have had a member died or or severely harmed by vaccines, it's not accurate to say that they are universally safe. And there's a lot of estimates that $4 billion really understates the amount of damage that comes from vaccines. So that debacle in 76 created a kind of a mess, because it threw into question the whole issue of how we manage viral diseases. And that basically was resolved as a question when a disease that was showing up in San Francisco, primarily in San Francisco in 1979-80, was named AIDS. And it was very interesting because in all that work I was doing before 1981, if you had circulating antibodies to a disease, you were considered to be, but in the when this new disease, which was AIDS, came along, the idea of circulating antibodies began to be an indicator of your having the disease. And once again, when we look at the coronavirus situation, we're not at all clear what we're dealing with, because there are lots of mixed messages about the circulating antibodies. So people who are apparently don't have any symptoms and seem to be fine turn out to have coronavirus disease. Apparently circulating antibodies. I don't know if that's what it is, but they're carrying the disease and they can spread it apparently. And that is without any symptoms. So that's a little discouraging. You mentioned the Judy Mikovits tape that's circulating around. It's very interesting. She's got a lot of credentials, done a lot of work, and then gotten in a lot of trouble simultaneously. Ended up in jail for allegedly doing things wrong in her laboratory. But it is a video that's fascinating to watch, because she makes some very, very bold statements, which I'm trying to find answers to. So, for example, she says, there's never been an RNA virus vaccine that worked. That's an interesting issue. I mean, I'd like to know, what's the answer to that? She says Dr. Fauci has been involved in attempting to do an AIDS viral vaccine, an AIDS vaccine, since 1981, basically, has not been successful. So are we going to have the same kind of trouble doing a coronavirus vaccine? She's saying that coronavirus is SARS-2, it's just basically she's making it seem as if it's just a precursor for SARS-3, 4, and 5. That means that they'll just be coming. Well, these are all questions that are quite vexing that need to be looked into, and yet what's happening is that particular video is being taken down off of YouTube and book and so forth. I guess Twitter is still on Twitter, but generally it's off of most other areas, so most people aren't seeing it. All of that indicates that we have a very, very, very peculiar problem on our hands. And there's no clear policy guidelines or policy. No one's in control of the policy. The White House put out some guidelines, which apparently are fairly soft, and blocked the CDC. It would not allow the CDC guidelines to go out, which were much tougher. Again, I don't draw the line on where we should be on this substantively, but it seems to me that information of all kinds ought to be flowing in a way that allows everyone to start making their decisions. And in our battle on making sure that vaccines are properly regulated and reviewed for safety as well as efficacy, FDA started working on that, and yet CDC seems to be in control. That's the Centers for Disease Control, seems to be in control of all the information about vaccines. And so material that is in the drug companies' patient package inserts about dangers of vaccines do not appear in the official government material about vaccines. So, again, it's a little vexing to know how to deal with this. In that Judy Mikovits tape, on YouTube, which has been taken down from YouTube, she was asked why Italians had such a big death rate. And she said because a year earlier they were subjected to an experimental flu vaccine that was widely used. Now, one of the questions that raises is, has anybody looked to see whether the people who got the flu vaccine a year ago are more susceptible to coronavirus today? There's some suggestion that they are, that that's true, but it is something that should be looked at, and the COVID team, I'll look into that. Clearly, there's a tremendous disconnect at the head of solving this problem. One of the problems morally that lies at the heart of all of this is that there appear to be people who believe that it is good for the country to open the economy, even if 100,000 people or 200,000 people die, because more people will die if the economy is closed. That's an issue that should be out there being discussed, and there should be a community consensus on how to proceed on that. If you go down the road of saying, well, 100,000, 200,000, that's acceptable, unfortunately, that opens the door to 1 million or 2 million. And this is not the kind of thing that goes away because of publicity. If it is, in fact, doing what it's doing or what it is alleged to be doing, putting an announcement out that we've controlled it isn't going to stop that. Anyway, that's a kind of a quick overview of what I've been seeing on the coronavirus. And why don't I stop and you see what you have to say and questions. You alluded to some of these points in your statement, and let's see what thoughts you have now that I've said what I had to say.
Well, all of your information is unbelievably excellent as usual, and I certainly appreciate the history. So the idea of the history gives us the deja vu scenario. Haven't we been here before? Like massive vaccinations, not working, all that sort of stuff. Those are some serious questions. Why the overregulation? Why is this stuff happening? You know, why do I always hear that vaccines are safe and effective everywhere you go, except for when you say, can you show us where vaccines are safe and effective? They're not, or they can't. And so these are all very confusing issues that really make it very leery for me to say, okay, sure, I'll just roll up my sleeve and take that first vaccine. But the reality is that there's a lot of people that will. So it's very, very challenging. Now, I'm going to share with you just a personal experience. In December, my mother-in-law was found unresponsive in her bed. Now remember, this is just a personal experience. She's older. I think she's 82. She's not healthy at all. Mentally as well. She's not completely crazy. She just has the TV talking to her. So she thinks Stephen Colbert is talking to her. So so the reality is she is somebody, the reason why I paint this picture, she lives in a second floor apartment in New York, a metro area, and has not left the house for a year, literally. Not walked down the stairs, not gone to a doctor. Doctors come to her. And she was almost on her deathbed. They brought her in, pre-coronavirus thing, had an intubate, I guess that's the word, where they literally put her in a medical coma so they can help her breathe, clear her body up, blah, 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 blah. She goes into a nursing home. Nobody can see her, right? They quarantine everybody. She was just released from the nursing home on Monday of the previous week. Well, she wasn't taking her diabetic medicine, and she had like a sugar coma thing going on. They had to call the emergency room. This is on Thursday. So she comes home on Monday. On Thursday, she's in the emergency room, and they're, redoing everything they have to do to fix her up. And then all of a sudden, now we find out that she has the coronavirus. So the question is like, I really think that she had the coronavirus way back in December. There's a lot of people that I know, Jim, that were super duper sick that I was talking to in December and January that were saying, I'm super duper sick. I've never been through anything like this before. One of them being one of my programmers, another one being a gal that I work with specifically. And I'm talking bad sick, like really sick. Like I've never had anything like this before in my life. So for whatever reason, I think it's been around a lot longer than anybody's fessing up to. That's number one. Number two is, How in the world can a woman who was discharged from a hospital where she probably should have been tested in a nursing home going through her recovery, how in the world was she ever discharged, number one? Number two, how did she get it in 3 days being in an apartment that she never left? No one ever goes in that apartment. It's just her and my father-in-law. But now all of a sudden she's labeled with coronavirus. And by the way, she's on her deathbed, so she probably should have died. And I don't say this any way flippantly. She's my mother-in-law, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. Take the emotional part of it out of it. The idea that this is very confusing times, Jim. Like, how in the world can a woman – and by the way, my father-in-law couldn't see her in the nursing home. Nobody could see her in the nursing home. They released her from the nursing home. This is New York, so we're talking about epicenter of coronavirus. How in the world could they release her to go back home and say, for instance, she was not – say, for instance, I think they should have tested her, and then now she's all of a sudden back in, and anybody that would have seen her probably would have thought she was going to die that day, and now all of a sudden she's labeled for coronavirus – and you say, wait a minute, how did they find out that fast, number one? Number two, did you get coronavirus in like 3 days? And what about my father-in-law? Chances are he's probably one of those people that are completely asymptomatic because he's been around this type of thing in nursing homes and whatever for a long time. And he doesn't seem to be affected with this stuff at all. So there's just something that doesn't, you know, you do the old sniff test, Jim. You know, let's collide some of those things that I mentioned a little bit earlier. Lots of people you know, Peter, were really sick in December and January. Now all of a sudden, you know, everybody's being labeled with coronavirus. For what reason? To raise up the death rate somewhere? For what reason? So hospitals maybe get more money when they have somebody die? I mean, there's people that are dying of heart attacks, and they're being told that if they check them off, and I don't think this is a rumor, basically everybody that dies has coronavirus, according to the death records. So what is real, what is not? And that's the really frustrating part. So I'll just let you untangle what I just said. But it's just really, there's something that doesn't smell right. And I think Donald Trump, his instincts are kicking back in and saying, listen, whatever you guys were pulling over the wool over our eyes one way or another, we're not standing for it. And whether it's convenient that it might be a ploy to get him not elected, or whether it's something to tear down the economy for whatever reason, or reset some control because of uprisings in different places. I think that people are starting to clear through the smoke and say, listen, we know it's serious, but we're not going to let you guys continue to manipulate us anymore by saying we have to shelter in. And not all the deaths are real coronavirus deaths, although the deaths that are coronavirus deaths are real deaths. So I'll let you untangle some of the things that I mentioned. Whoops, Jim. I don't hear you. You might have
hey, I'm here. I'm
there you
here.
Go.
Yep, I'm here.
There you go.
A little bit of a the whole thing is complex. I mean, again, in that Mikovic video, she says that that people are being identified as coronavirus fatalities in hospitals because of the payments that they get. There are videos out that say from doctors who say that the ventilators don't actually apply in many of these cases because the people have plenty of lung pumping capacity, but they're not getting oxygen. Something's interfering with the oxygen, even though the lungs are working. So if people get in there with a ventilator and start pumping the lungs and the oxygen still doesn't get into the blood, they're not going to get better, and they die. And if you die, according to Mikovic, if you die on a ventilator in a hospital, you get a $39,000 payment. There's one hospital in New York that had 100% coronavirus death rate. And remember that these hospitals are institutions that look for income, and they, you know, it could be perfectly reasonable idea that they get a bonus to do this kind of thing. But the doctors on the front lines, at least some of them, are saying we're having a real problem here that we don't understand. This is something different than anything we've ever dealt with. And maybe the things that are being used to deal with it aren't right, in, at least in some of the cases. And that was one of the points on the ventilators. Also, apparently, coronavirus is going outside the lungs already to the heart. The heart disease issues are there. And then it's looking apparently involving other organs. again, these are all questions that we need to sort out and look at. And unfortunately, the federal government, even the Corona Task Force, apparently, is not putting out information on these kinds of issues. I don't know if they're addressing them, but they're not putting any information out about them, at least as far as I know. But we're getting lots of push to open the economy. And that poses a very tricky problem, because the economy has to be open, but it has to be open in a way that enhances the health of the individuals going back to work, not that undermines that health. And if it's just open, if it was turned off with a switch because everybody said stay home, now it's turned on with a switch, everybody go back to work, it looks like there's a pretty good chance that whatever this coronavirus problem is will flare up again. And in fact, if they do get back to work now and through the summer, there's apparently a pretty strong consensus that it'll come back again in the fall. And basically, the point is, we don't know hardly anything about this. It's a new kind of event, a unique virus. I learned again from the Mikovich tape, something to be easily checked, that that vaccine that was used in Italy was made from dog substrate, which dogs have a lot of coronavirus. So did we put coronavirus in a whole bunch of people with the experimental flu vaccine? Unclear. Now, that's on the disease side, but let's go over to the management side. It's a fact that between 2010 and 2016, there were at least three invasions of viruses into the U.S. There was the SARS-1, H1N1, and Ebola, and they were managed in a way that did not set off the kind of hysteria that we currently have. Now, I don't know whether, apparently it looks like the SARS-2 or coronavirus, I think they sound like they're the same, and if you read about them, that's what it is a much tougher thing to manage than Ebola or either Ebola or SARS-1. And so it's quite possible that even a good management program would have caused everything to be very difficult. But we didn't have a good management program. That's very clear. Trying to devolve it all under the states looks like a very difficult plan. We're in a situation here in Maryland where the Republican Maryland governor is at odds with the president over how to open the economy. He wants to open it. He wants to open it deliberately and carefully, as does the governor of Ohio, who's also a Republican. Both of them are apparently doing a pretty good job in sorting things out and causing the difficulties of the whole pandemic problem to be better managed than they seem to be managed on the federal level. And again, it's very difficult to be critical in one sense, because I don't think even the people who are the most expert in infectious diseases are clear about what's going on here. This is something very different and new that has not been like anything that we've seen before, apparently. Now, either that's true, and that explains why there's such a mess on our hands, or it's just another routine thing that has been completely mishandled. And I'm inclined to think it's a new viral problem that we have to come up with new management tools for. But opening the economy is easy to say, and it's not that easy to do. And I suspect that we're in foreseeing quite a different economy going forward than we've had coming up to now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it affects, the major industries where there's groups of people, like sports, churches, music events, music in general, concerts.
It's very interesting, because where they've begun to open places up, they find that the workers are not interested in going back to work, and the consumers aren't interested in going back to the stores. And so the government, being the government's position, is, all right, if you don't go to work, if we open the economy and we say you can go to work and you don't come to us and apply for unemployment benefits. So we're going to try to force people to go back to work. Interestingly enough, I mean, it's very daunting, but it looks like today's, I haven't seen today's employment figures out yet, I'm sure they just I'm sure they're out by now, but apparently the pre-release numbers were 18% unemployed. That's bigger than the that's just verging on what we had in the Great Depression from, you know, 1929 to 41 or 42, 43. 18%. That's a tough number. And I noticed that I think it was Neiman Marcus and one of the other big store chains went into bankruptcy yesterday. I think you're going to see a lot of airlines having trouble. Boeing's in business largely because they got a $63 billion bailout. But all in all, it's not going to be that easy to get people back to work the way they were working before. So we need to, you know, be alert to the way the system unfolds, because I think we're going to be in a very, very different world from now on out.
Yep, I would agree. And then, you know, we haven't even talked about school. You know, school. Yeah, over here in Daytona, I'm sorry, over here in Florida, they're not doing graduations the way they usually do. They're having graduations at the Speedway. So I don't know how they're doing it.
Yeah, that was the best story I saw, was the graduation at a drive-in movie theater. They have they're going to graduate in the cars, and the guy giving out the diplomas has got an extended arm that he's created that he can give the diplomas out and still be 5 feet away or whatever, and he's going car to car giving the diplomas out.
And the beauty of those stories are the creativity of the people. We're going to figure this out. The government may figure this out, but we're going to figure this out.
That's the whole point. And I'm in this thing, and it's a survey of some kind, and they said, what one word would you use to describe the American people at this point? And I said, resilient. They're inventing things all over the place. We have a very interesting Italian restaurant that we go to downtown Washington about once a month, maybe once every 2 months. And they started a food club. Closed. They have to be closed because the mayor ordered all the restaurants closed. So they started a food club. And so you sign up for the food club. And then once a week, we go every Tuesday night, and you pick up a meal. I think she makes the same meal for everybody. You pick up the meal and drive down, pick it up, and go home and eat it at home. I go there now 4 times a month, and she's got a better business out of me than she had before. And it looks to me, I mean, just, you know, cars drive up and drive away. It looks to me like they're doing a pretty good business, and she seems to be pretty happy about it. And we have another one up here, a Thai restaurant near our house, and we go there once a week and pick up food outside. And when we're there, there's a big crowd, you know, standing 8 feet apart down the block waiting to pick up food, which you order online, and then you come and pick it up. They're doing a pretty bang-up business. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these innovative businesses that are starting like this don't thrive and remain after everything else is brought back online. I can't say I'm not saying definitely that's going to happen, but boy, I'll tell you, this lady running this Italian restaurant has come up with a nice business model. There's a number of groups in Washington that have meetings. You know, they meet once a month or so. Well, they're going online once a week now to these are like, you know, artistic groups, and they have a theater here that they took all their playwrights, and the playwrights are writing special plays to put on Zoom. Very interesting stuff. Very interesting.
Excellent. So, yeah, I know a long time ago we had a local delicatessen, and they were a Polish family, and they used to make homemade meals and then freeze them. And I used to buy them for like $10 per meal. And they were great. I mean, they were like real homemade cooking. I loved it. And then eventually the delicatessen closed down or was sold, and they stopped doing that. But, I mean, I think we're going to get that level of creativity come back. And then, of course, you know what's going to happen, Jim. The governments are going to get involved, and they're going to regulate the hell out of it, figuring out how that's – whatever they're doing is somehow illegal, or somehow they need a permit to do it, or somehow they need something else to do it.
Just remember that when the government gets in there to do that, at least 50% of the time, if not more, there's some special economic interest that's trying to get rid of their competitors.
That's right.
Just remember that. We are in a situation where the competitors in a business who have money want to pile on with regulations so that the people who don't have money cannot compete and cannot participate in the economy. And basically what that boils down to is large concentrated businesses are very, very deadly to small business. You'll see all this small business, all this small business continuously manipulated by laws and practices of very large companies. And
right.
A small business, by the way, is defined as a company that has 500 or fewer employees. So imagine that.
Right, absolutely. Well,
I mean,
Jim, thanks for being here.
A business with 500 employees looks big.
I know, yeah. 500. If I was running a company with 500 and anybody said, oh, you have a small business, I'd be like, really? Really? 500 employees, you call it small? Well, our fine government does for whatever reasons they do it. So we're going to have you back next week if you're around.
I plan to be.
That, perfect. So we are back with Jim Turner. For those people listening in, go to citizens.org, CITIZENS.org, and sign up for the newsletter. Check out the previous radio shows. This is a great one for those of you as well as the other ones. Share it with your downline, your friends, your business partners, sometimes even company owners, stuff like that. And we will catch you next week on Building Fortunes Radio. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you very much, Peter. Next week.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. And read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word. Tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.